Well, my favorite middle name story revolves around one of my favorite all-time singers, is David Lee Roth,
Oh, right.
and in his autobiography, he notes that,
You've
which
already
is,
told this story on the podcast, by the way.
have I really?
You're almost out of stories. You
Right,
got
it's
no
very possible.
anecdotes, nothing left. I think we even used that as a cold open, as me joking Jeffrey Lee Edelstein or something, and you, I
So we're
forget what
saying,
your
so
response
I'm
was.
out of anecdotes.
You are completely out of anecdotes. This may be the last episode of the podcast.
Use that for the cold open.
Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers, the podcast that only needs two-thirds as many hosts as SmartLess to provide one-third the quality of SmartLess. I'm Eric Raskin. I'm joined, as always, by Jeff Edelstein, who just recently was lamenting to me that he is both the Jason Bateman of Low Rollers and the Sean Hayes of Low Rollers, even though all he wants in life is to be the Will Arnett of Low Rollers. Sorry, Jeff. But hey, at least Jason Bateman left you a voicemail once. That's
He
something, right?
did. He did. He did. That's very nice. I was at my nana's funeral and I couldn't answer the phone, and that was the end of that. I should have been the fourth member of SmartLess, or honestly, I should just kick out Hayes. But
Right.
whatever. That's neither here nor there. Coming up today, we have an interview with Keith White of Safer Gambling Strategies. Fun little story about Keith White, by the way. I use him. I teach some journalism classes, communications classes over at Rider University in New Jersey, and I use White as a perfect example of why you always ask how somebody spells their name, because
Sure.
it's Whyte.
Yes.
Anyway,
Very,
we're gonna be
very
talking.
progressive spelling by his parents.
Isn't it
Or
really?
their
Is
parents,
it
or someone's
right?
parents.
Or somebody screwed up at Ellis Island. Either
Sure.
way, Keith is here. He'll be talking to us about all things RG. But before we get to that, of course, as always, plenty of news to discuss.
Yeah, and our email inboxes have been overflowing the past week with studies and surveys regarding the gambling industry, and some of them have actually been pretty interesting and warranted articles on our sites instead of the standard ignore delete move. So we're going to discuss some of those this week, four in particular that stood out. We can drill down on some or all of these. You wrote, Jeff, about a Spectrum Gaming Group study that found brick and mortar casino slots have a hold of about 7.6%, while online slots have a hold not quite half as high, 3.7%. Another study conducted by three business schools found that the launch of online sports betting was good financially for the brick and mortar casinos in those states. Not just didn't cannibalize them, it actually helped. Third one here, the American Customer Satisfaction Index ran its first survey on regulated gambling apps, and DraftKings got the highest rating, narrowly edging out BetMGM and FanDuel. And finally, an NCPG study indicated that reported cases of, quote, risky gambling behavior are down about 27% from their 2021 peak when COVID was still impacting behavior and mental health fairly significantly. Jeff, we don't have to dive into all four of these, but where do you want to start here?
Well, let's start with the Spectrum one, the one I wrote about. Just to be clear, those numbers are for Pennsylvania only. Okay,
Right.
only three states break it out this detailed: Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, West Virginia. And Rhode Island, West Virginia are a little early in the game for this study, but they're trending the right direction. But I mean, it's a study that was taken from numbers that anyone could look at, and it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no the overhead is much less, obviously, when it comes to online versus brick and mortar. So it would it it does. I mean, if you're a dedicated slot player and you're in it to win money, I suppose doing it online is better, even though both are going to lose you money in the long term, just to be
Sure.
clear. So, I'm not, which brings us to the second thing that you talked about, the cannibalization thing. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more I look at it, the more I talk to people, I think they're two different things. I mean, online casino and in person. Like it's I don't think the crossover is necessarily as cannibalistic as some might think. For instance, I play online slots, much to my chagrin sometimes, but I do it, to collect my, nickels and dimes and the promo stuff. I have zero desire to go to, parks in Bensalem across the
Right.
river and sit in front of a, slot machine. Zero. Zero. Like, never have, never will, right? And I'm sure people that enjoy going to the casino and having fun and drinking a few beers and saying hello to the cocktail waitresses, that's a completely different experience. So I kind of tend to believe that, like, the cannibalization fears are overblown. And it wouldn't shock me, as that study said, that like it's actually helped, created more of like a buzz, right? Because
Right.
I'll tell you this much, if I do get an offer from Bet Parks, which is the closest casino to me and to you,
Sure.
right?
Right. Yep.
If they send me something in the mail saying, come to the casino, here's 20 free bonus dollars, here's, what I, well, maybe. Maybe I'd make the drive to see if I can like cash out 20 bucks and play and, roll my DFS day for free. It's possible, you
Right.
know?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess that study, the fact that it was sports betting specifically, not saying online casino doesn't cannibalize, but rather that it's sports betting that, but the fact
Oh,
that no, but I do agree with you that I think that the idea of online casino cannibalizing, I think it's largely just an excuse for companies that have done a bad job establishing an online presence to say they don't want online casino legalized because maybe for them it's other companies taking away a little of their business. Yeah, I agree with you that it's mostly different players. And if anything, I never played slots in casinos. I played some table games and played some poker, but never played slots. Play them online a bit. It is a totally different thing, but I could see myself, if I'm in a casino, decide, no, I'm going to play a little slots now that I've
right.
developed a little bit of a taste for it. So if anything, even online casino can create new brick and mortar casino dollars. So, but yeah, I think the you look at who's pushing the idea of cannibalization, and I think that tells you how
Right.
real it is. I'm sure it's not completely fabricated, but it's definitely overemphasized by companies with an interest in it. The slot machine study of the difference between online and live, what I find interesting about it is that it tells us that the operators can just set these slot games to have
Oh, of
whatever
course,
RTP
yeah.
they want, which we kind of knew, but it's just sort of interesting that you want a version of Huff and Puff that has a 99% RTP. You just beep boop boop hit a few buttons, it's going to come out 99%, and then you want it 75%, can do that. You'll call it online lottery, since that's basically what online lottery is, slots with terrible odds that are closer to lottery odds. But I did find that one really interesting, and I've heard rumblings along those lines that online slots pay better, but it's interesting to see it broken down like that.
Yeah, I mean it is significant. I mean, obviously, if long-term slots players are you're, I mean, unless you get wildly lucky, you're gonna lose, it
Right.
doesn't matter at 4% or 8%. But yeah,
But
what were the
as the guy that you spoke to for the article who was involved in the study, as he
right.
said, when he sort of broke down the math on how much longer your money will last you,
Right.
I mean, that's sort of the takeaway, is you're going to lose either way, but if you can get 240 spins out of it instead of 120
More
spins out
fun.
of, or what, yeah, exactly. So it makes sense for the online casinos to want to keep you playing longer. They're still going to win in the long run. As you said, they have lower overhead. I just on the study about the, not study so much, but survey of the ratings for the different apps. I feel like
Yeah.
we've discussed this, that we mostly just bet wherever the best deposit bonuses were when we started, and where the best promos and odds are. But so for me, an app would have to be really bad for me to choose anything based on the quality of the app. But DraftKings is a nice, smooth app. I'm not surprised it finished number one, but I don't know if you have any opinion on like a favorite app, or if for you it's just here's.
I've said it before. I mean, I don't like that they've screwed they've taken away all their wonderful promos with it. The ESPN Bet app
Right.
is lightning fast, payouts are immediate, which that to me is that's a huge deal for me. Like it's a deal breaker for me
Right.
knowing that it's
It
going to
takes
take
a
me
while.
48 hours
Right.
or one I'm not even going to name it, but one place in New Jersey you had to initiate the deposit, you have to. So you signed in, you withdraw. They're going to send you a code. You got to put the code in. You have to put your password in, and it
Right.
can't be. You can't like. And it's not saved. You have to remember your password. They make
Right.
it very hard. ESPN Bet, bing bong bing. Literally, by the
Yeah.
time I hit the button, I go to PayPal. The money's there. So for me, ESPN Bet is the cleanest app. Fanatics, which I'm going to talk about a little later, also tremendous, tremendous app. Lightning fast. Both of them also very good with customer service. DraftKings, I feel like their customer service is lacking. FanDuel is pretty good with the speed. But yeah, I mean, I think DraftKings won that survey more on just name recognition than anything else.
You don't think it
My,
was like a blind test of
I
like
don't.
it wasn't the Pepsi challenge of
I don't
sports
think
betting
so. It's
apps?
fine. DraftKings is fine. I think it's perfectly acceptable as far as these things go, but I don't think it's the best, not by a long shot.
Do you buy the Pepsi challenge results from when we were kids, or was Pepsi just like lying about that for the sake of commercials? They were just selecting the people who chose Pepsi when in fact the majority chose Coke. Because I don't know anyone who prefers Pepsi over Coke
Yeah, I'm
personally.
pretty sure like I would like it would be like I wouldn't like let's say, "Oh, hi, I really love you too. Oh, I love you. Let's get you want to get a Coke and celebrate our love." Well, if I prefer Pepsi, I'd say, "Well, it was nice knowing you."
Right.
This can't continue.
When we go out to restaurants and their fountain sodas are Pepsi, my son like slumps in his seat. He'll still get the Pepsi, but he's very
Right.
disappointed.
No, Coke is it's this is not a subjective take. Coke is better.
Right.
Objectively, the end.
Yes, agreed. All right. One other news item this week. Really, one other collection of news items. Three things went down with regard to prediction markets. On Monday morning, Polymarket, which is not licensed in the U.S., announced it had bought QCEX, which is licensed with the CFTC. So Polymarket is apparently coming to the US. Then Monday night, there was supposed to be a Senate committee vote on Brian Quintenz for chair of the CFTC, but the vote was postponed, reportedly because it was going to be a straight party line vote and one Republican's flight was delayed. And without her, Quintenz was going to come up one vote short. And then Tuesday night, three California tribes sued Kalshi and Robinhood for offering what they consider illegal sports betting on tribal lands in violation of IGRA. I know you're sick of talking about prediction markets, Jeff, but I assume you can find something to say about one of these stories.
I have two things to say.
Okay.
First off, the Polymarket coming back is going to, I think it's going to, it's like a accelerator fire, like to the whole prediction. Like you thought prediction markets were hot and in the news. I think it's going to be even more. I would imagine that Polymarket and Kalshi are now going to go into a FanDuel DraftKings type of, competition for eyeballs and money and all that stuff. So I'm hoping to see some big promos. Basically what I'm hoping for. As for the court cases, I think I'm going to ask you to next time bring this up when it appears before the United States Supreme Court.
Okay, that you are sticking with your belief that it's going all the way there.
It's 100% going all the way there. There's just, I mean, it's going to be a long time, and we're going to have a lot of discussion about this court case and that court case and this appeal and that appeal and blah blah
Right.
blah 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 blah.
Right.
And by the time we're it's believe me, Donald Trump Jr. will be on his second term by the time this is settled.
Ugh. You took all the wind out of my sails with that one. I will I don't really have much to say about the California stuff, the lawsuit, any of that. I will note that it sounds like the Quintenz vote will be rescheduled soon. They're saying I think there's like an August end of session or something that they're trying to get that so it'll probably happen in the next couple of weeks, and I guess he has the votes just barely to move forward unless there's a last minute change of heart. Like when Morty Seinfeld was running for Del Boca Vista condo president.
That's what was the guy's name that screwed him? I can't
Jack
remember that.
Klumpis
Jack
was without,
Klumpus.
yeah. Jerry, take the pen. Different episode, but still, that's my Jack Klumpis impression is that line.
Those are some of my favorite episodes
They're
when
so
they're
good.
down in the old Boca Vista, because it I mean it I've lived through that,
Yeah.
my, well, I as a child, with my parents and my
Right.
grandparents, the sofa bed.
Did your grandparents eat the early bird?
There was early bird. There was my father bitching about his back hurting after sleeping on the sofa bed.
Right,
Like,
that
I
one rings
mean,
true. Did your fa
it
did your
is
father
true.
ever go to the doctor and yell, "My wallet is gone! My wallet is
It's
gone!"
very possible. It's crazy how old Seinfeld is at this point. I
Yeah.
mean, it's like, what, 35 years now it's been since it debuted? Over 35
Yeah.
years.
No, like exactly 19, I guess, was it summer of 89 or
I
summer in
think,
this area?
yeah. It's crazy.
We're getting old, Jeff.
We are getting old.
All right, well, let's move along to our interview guest before we get any older, shall we?
Good idea.
So Jeff was just sending me messages in the office Slack yesterday about martingaling his way to risking perhaps unwise amounts on hands of online blackjack, which makes this as appropriate a time as any for a talk about responsible gambling. We now welcome to the pod an old friend from our Gamble On days, the founder and president of Safer Gambling Strategies and the former longtime executive director of the National Council on Problem Gambling, Keith White. Keith, thanks for joining us on Low Rollers.
Oh, awesome to be here. Thank you so much.
So let me start you with a topical question. The year 2025 has been marked largely by the spread of forms of online gambling that are not state regulated, prediction markets and sweepstakes, namely. To what degree are you troubled by these being available without the sort of RG oversight we typically see with the state regulated sites?
I'm pretty troubled, and I've been in this industry long enough to remember when the standard was if it's not explicitly made legal in a state, it is illegal. And whether that's the Statute of Queen Anne from 17, blah, 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 or just the way, US law has always been held, that was what I grew up with. 95, when I came to the American Gaming Association as director of research, that was the standard. If it's not explicitly made legal, for a certain group, certain, age, all that kind of stuff, you couldn't do it. And now it seems like we're in the opposite universe, the upside down world, where unless it's specifically illegal, then you can do it without regulation, without restriction, and certainly, to your point, Eric, without responsible gambling. So, anecdotally, I'm hearing that there are people who are getting into trouble on these, alternative markets. Statistically, the research suggests that many people who, for example, trade excessively or use some of these financial products are also gambling. And so there's probably a real interesting chicken and egg cause and effect question. If you're this massive kind of Wall Street trader, day trader guy, you've already probably got a lot of risk. Do you also play poker? Yes. Do you also play blackjack? Of course. And so, but where, how things shift in between those is really interesting. But yeah, so there's risk there. In the absence of regulation, the absence of responsible gambling, that's probably where the risk is going to collect and pool. And so even if your sweepstakes is not your primary problem, it may be where your problem expresses itself more because there's far fewer protections in place, both on the corporate side and on the regulation side. No one's going to give you a helpline number if you're on one of these, fly by night, crypto sweepstakey sports betty things. So there's some risk there. And the other thing we'll talk about, I've talked to Jeff with this, is I lived through the day trading boom. We've already seen this play out once before. And that was that there was a lot of folks that got hurt way back then.
One thing, and this is going to lead into a second question of mine, but to start with, the a lot of these quasi-legal, illegal, gray market, whatever you want to call it, are 18 and over, right? My son is 16, doesn't know how to work a washing machine, and is get and he tells me he gets inundated, on TikTok and Snapchat, whatever, with ads for this stuff. He says it's all over, and so like. I feel like I don't want to say they're targeting kids, but I mean it's an easy mark. If there's no oversight, I mean this is it's right where you would want to go. If I was trying to sell my sweepstakes or whatever, thing, I'd go right to the kids. And speaking of the kids, I know we talked about this and I wrote about this. I've come around to, I said RG is dead, right? And I said that to you in your quote that you gave back to me was RG is not dead, which is good. It made for a good column. I wrote about it as an endgame, but I really believe, and I want you to talk about this, how it's so backwards to me the way responsible gambling is built right now. Because you look at any other, and I'm going to put it in air quotes, any other vice. Okay, or anything that might not be that healthy for you or might lead to, danger down the road, whether it be alcohol, drugs, sex, too much sun, too much time online, you name it. Where the most so much of the effort is geared towards kids and education, right? Whereas it seems like the vast majority of RG money and time is spent on people who already have a problem.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, no coincidence that, when I founded my firm, it's safer gambling strategies, right? I think there's a nomenclature issue. But regardless of what you call it, RG, consumer protection, blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing. And yes, that we can all sing the Whitney Houston "Children Are Our Future," but that's not untrue. And I think part of this is that the most RG. So here's my takeaway. You guys will love this. Most RG is driven by the industry. The industry, the regulated, legalized industry, cannot, will not, should not be talking to kids. So that leaves government, state government, those who are profiting immensely. Let's just take New York State with 51% tax rate, right? Shouldn't they be in the lead in talking to kids? Isn't that the traditional job of government as the regulator and protector? Where's all these billions of dollars a quarter going into? I can tell you it's not going into responsible gambling education for kids. The New York Council is doing the Lord's work and they're doing great stuff, and they get, probably, I don't know, a couple $1 million here and there. It's a pittance. And until we start taking youth education seriously, until we get the states in really involved in investing in this, and to the tune of, I think the gap between the amount of public funding for problem gambling and responsible gambling and the estimated need, the National Council set at 1%, that's a $1.2 billion gap. Right now, this year, the delta between the 1% that the National Council calls for based on revenue, 1% of revenue, and the 100 and call it 50 million in actual public spending. The states are cheap. They are getting windfall tax revenue and profits from this, and they're the ones that should be shoveling, let's just say, 1% of it back into youth education. If we had an extra $1 billion, I think you see a lot more youth education, a lot more innovative stuff. Right now, the only people who are talking to kids are Drake, sponsored by Steak.
Right.
That's what my son sees as well. He's 19. So yeah, we've got a huge challenge ahead of it. I do think this is something that their industry really can't solve for, because it's really not their domain. I mean, FanDuel has an effort, Trusted Voices, that they're trying to help parents figure out how to talk to kids. But even that, there's a lot of criticism. Should a gambling company, and the parallel with alcohol, should Anheuser-Busch be talking to your kids? Probably not, but you should be talking to your kids, and the state certainly is. But that's the gap in gambling, I would say.
Well, you had said something that I think was, I mean, I'm a little saddened that I didn't get wider eyes, right? And that you said to me that you think this generation is it's over. Like there's no saving basically our children's generation because no one's looking out for them. It's going to take our kids when they're making laws in their 40s to remember back all their
Sure.
friends that got into trouble because there was no education. I mean, no education. And it's crazy to me that we're spending so much time and effort on treating people who already have the problem as opposed to, trying to, just see. I mean, my son, I haven't taught him yet, but I'm going to teach him like
Yeah.
RTP and what all this means so that he has some semblance of, I'm not going to teach him about martingaling, but I am,
Yeah, please don't. Yeah, that's
Well, you
the
should teach him about it. You just shouldn't encourage it. There's Well, exactly. But that's
that's
what
the
it is.
thing.
I remember high school, 1989, sex ed being taught by Mr. McPeak, who was the classic out of Hollywood gym teacher with the football shorts, and he would say things like this, and it stuck in my head. When men were men and sheep were scared, I didn't know what that meant then. I think I know what it means now. I'm very upset about it. It probably explains everything that's happened to me sexually since then.
So much,
However, at least there was somebody who brought it up. It's not brought up. It's not a thing. It's not in the universe. And I think it's such a huge miss by the entire RG community. Now you're saying, the nomenclature, safer gambling strategies. Is your firm is are you looking a lot more towards education than treatment?
It's I mean, that's a whole different thing. Virginia is the only state that's mandated education, in the public schools, and that's almost solely due to Breanne Dorar-Schwal, who also lives here in right down the next community from me in Virginia, and used to work at NCBG as our legislative director when I was there, and now is a consultant on her own. So she helped get that law in place in Virginia. No one else is doing it. But I mean, and there it's not to say I mean, I know we're laughing about this. There are a lot of youth education efforts out there. They're just, state specific, poorly funded, maybe grade specific, but, and I will say, when I was at NCPG, when that huge grant that we received from the NFL, one third of that we put into youth education. And that program is still running. It's called the Agility Grant Program. And so it's a small grant program where states and nonprofits, community organizations can apply to NCBG with a prevention, youth gambling prevention plan scheme, and they'll get funded. It's a competitive grant process. But over the past 3 years, that I think NCBG's probably disbursed well over $3 million, which is for NCBG is great. I mean, that's a huge
Right.
thing.
It's
$3 million
nothing.
across the entire United States. I mean, come on,
Right.
so you have to look at it both ways. You have to look at it that there's more progress than ever. There's a lot of incubators out there. Some of these grant programs, the goal of that grant program was to say, let's fund 50, 75 pilot projects, see what works for high school, African American high school kids in a particular state. And then can you replicate that, across the country? And I think, but it's a long slog. It's got to, the investment has to increase by a thousandfold before we even start beginning to scale that up. And there's still, frankly, the other thing you guys know well is there's a lot of unanswered questions. This is where the comparisons to alcohol and tobacco break down a lot, because alcohol, your body weight times the amount of alcohol equals,
Sure.
there's a standard that we've kind of all half learned, and there's no dose equivalent response for gambling. It can be done recreationally without harm, and like you said, teaching your kid about poker, probably protective. That's good. So before we jump headfirst on all these programs, it'd be good to know that what we were doing
Works.
actually worked. And so again, but and I hate to keep going back to money, but if you're not funding it, you're not going to get any of these answers.
So to play devil's advocate a bit, I'm curious for your response to this, just on this idea of the next generation coming up in trouble here. But Jeff just said he's going to talk to his son. I've had conversations with my son where I am legitimately like the lowest of low rollers, and so he sees me during a game betting like literally $2 on this prop or $5 on this or whatever, and we sort of talk about it. Is there some positive to all the legalization and all the advertising that this generation will come up with things normalized with regard to gambling and in certain, I think there will be a lot of problems, obviously, but will there also be a portion of this generation that comes up really well educated because they've been exposed to it more?
Absolutely, Eric. Yeah, normalization, expansion breeds normalization. Normalization for a small percentage of people is going to be problematic, right? Because they're going to jump into it, and they think all their friends are doing it, and there's this social pressure to bet on sports now, especially if you're a young boy, and that's going to lead to some problems. But for a lot of other people, normalization is going to bring it out of the closet. And I don't use that term lightly. I do think it now allows us to have a societal-wide conversation about gambling, about the fact that it's an adult activity. It's fun, but it can be risky. Don't lose your house. Don't just double up and double up, because people may not know what a Martingale system is, but they should know that when the odds are not in your favor, continuing to persist is not the wise play. So I think most parents don't have those conversations the way they would about alcohol and sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So I think it's a real teachable moment. And we have to help as professionals in this field, we have to help those who don't understand a little bit better about what, Jeff mentioned RTP or closing line value. Some of these terms are not going to be obvious and intuitive to folks. So there's a lot of demystification. But yeah, it when it's no longer when gambling is no longer in the shadows, it provides a lot of opportunity for us all to have that conversation. That used to be the theme of the National Council's Problem Gambling Awareness Month. Have the conversation. And I think that was it, and it was really popular because it could apply across so many areas. And exactly, I think what you're talking about. There's tremendous, tremendous opportunity.
One other topical item that I'd love to get your take on real quick is just micro betting has been in the news because of this the Luis Ortiz scandal. Where do you stand on from a problem gambling perspective the fact that people can bet on every pitch or every tennis point or whatever. We always bring up the cliche about can't put the toothpaste back in the tube or the genie back in the bottle or whatever. But what's your reaction to the rise of micro betting from an RG perspective?
I mean, there's definitely concerns, but counterintuitively, this in some ways it's a little bit like parlays, where there's a line of thinking that this is almost recreational, because sophisticated bettors aren't hitting too many 50 team parlays. The odds are so bad. And if you're betting on the next pitch, you're probably not doing deep statistical analysis. It's not a strategic thing. It's a, hey, let's throw $5 on the fact that so and so is going to strike out so and so. That's almost, in a very weird way, the total lack of information, the complete impulse-driven nature of that bet is, for many people, purely recreational. Nobody, I hope, thinks that they're going to build a successful career, they're going to pay the mortgage tomorrow, because there's so much randomness in that. And of course, there are people who are going to get into deep, deep, deep trouble, because that highly impulsive, recreational, non-strategic betting is also a hallmark of someone who's just has an out of control gambling problem, needs to stay in action. So it cuts both ways. I think it's one kind of basic tenet of responsible gambling is you've got to know the odds. And with micro betting, I would argue most people have no idea what the true odds are, nor do they have time to calculate them, nor is there any real way to calculate them. And by the time they've even thought about that, the next pitch has already been thrown. So if we can lean into that in RG education and say, look, if you're micro betting, more or less think about it like a lottery, just have fun, spin it out there. So that's why it's really important to set a limit, because you're not strategically micro betting, or most normal humans can't. And so RG, again, it's complex, it evolves, because that message is not right for everybody, but that message might be right for a lot of people to help them avoid problems. Different RG tools, the last thing I'll say, Eric, is that different RG tools, I think, work differently for different areas. And so I think with micro betting, limits are really, really critical. Because you're not, as I said, you're not knowing the odds, you're not strategically thinking about it. In other areas, if you're more of a blackjack player, limits might not be as important as a budget tool, because you're going to be playing over time. You're going to have wins, losses, you're going to be up and down. And so maybe a budget calculator there is a lot more relevant.
Before we let Keith go, I just want to say one thing to the both of you in case there's any concerns. You don't need to worry about my martingale snafu.
We're a little worried.
No, the reasons that you don't need to be worried is because A, I have a system, and B, I was due. So.
That of course, that's right. Yeah, that's yeah. So I'm reassured now. Yeah, you're good. Yep.
Jeff is very much a results over process guy, except when the results are bad, and then he notes
Then
that his
blame the
process was
process.
fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get
Well, it's always great talking to you, Keith.
Yeah.
Anyone listening can go to safergamblingstrategies.com to learn more or to contact you. Great talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on the pod.
No, it's awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Keith. Always great catching up with him. So, Jeff, my little gambling anecdote this week is a follow-up to last week's anecdote, and I'll be much less long-winded this time. Last week, I explained in great detail that FanDuel Casino promo where I had to play a certain amount of various games for 5 straight days. Shortly after we posted the pod, I got my casino bonus in my account. You'll recall that in the past, similar promotions have gotten me like $180 or so. This one,
Oh,
$36.15.
that's brutal.
And that's in casino bonus. That's
Right.
not money. So you have to play through it once to withdraw. $36 after all that. So you're the big winner here, Jeff, by giving up on the promo after the
And I
first
got a
day.
$10 credit for it.
That's
Did
true.
you win money in the lead up to it, or did you lose?
I think I may have been down about $25 and then played my third. I've told you that I tend to
Let it
deposit and
ride.
withdraw strictly in $25 increments. So if I have
Right.
less than that in my account, I'll keep playing it or whatever. So I think I ended up even on the whole thing. I probably was down like one $25 deposit and then managed to withdraw $25 on that. But
That's
yeah.
Jeez.
I did recently have a nice 230x win in a bonus round of Huff and Even More Puff, a 40-cent spin that turned into like $103.
You
So
love
that
the Huff and Puff.
I yeah, you know, as long as, you know, we had Keith White on, I'm gonna say the word. I'm a little bit addicted, slightly addicted to 40-cent spins on Huff and Puff, Huff and More Puff, Huff and Even More Puff, any Huff and Puff I'm in.
The 40-cent spins. I thought. I mean, I'm a 20-cent spin guy. You've really. You're. You're.
20 cent just it doesn't give me the juice, you know. I need that 40 cents to feel it.
It's where it starts. At least you didn't martingale like I did. That
No.
was bad. But I won. Ended
Right.
up $46 on the whole affair. So it's all
There you
good.
go. Yep.
Yeah, happy days. All right. I wonder about Fanatics for a minute. I was real dubious about their chances to make a splash in the sports betting world, but and really, I think this might actually be for the first time in my life. I think I was wrong. As I was saying earlier, it's a great app. It's super fast, super intuitive, very easy to navigate, and the super fast payouts, which I like there. We had a story this week by our writer at InGame, Daniel O'Boyle. His story was a great story. Basically, that Fanatics is the only sports book around that doesn't need the sports book. 96% of their income comes from not the sports book. So they are doing things a little bit differently. They're very customer friendly. For instance, if you like have a player prop and your player gets hurt, you're basically getting your money back. They call this quote fair play. Pro bettors call it bullshit. But you know what?
Right.
Fanatics isn't looking for pro bettors. They're looking for fans. Maybe addicts, but definitely fans. They can take chances. They could do stuff. They could try things that other apps can't. I'm curious to see what else they have up their sleeve. They have Matt King. They have like big names like running this. Listen, I don't know what the future holds for sports betting in America. Nobody does, but I'm starting to think that Fanatics is going to have a pretty big part of it. And that's my take, man. So until next week, we are low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.